Welcome to TNC Talks, a podcast from Town & Country magazine. I'm your host, Adam Rath, senior editor at Town & Country. On May 9th of 2018, Town & Country held its fifth annual philanthropy summit, where thought leaders from around the world gathered for a day full of inspiring discussions, panels, and workshops. On today's episode, we'll take an inside look into one of those panels, titled Conscious Capitalism, and learn more about one of the leading entrepreneurs in this space, Mr. Ken Rickey.
Hi, I'm Ken Rickey. I'm the chairman of FlexJet.
The Conscious Capitalism panel aimed to explore using business as a vehicle for philanthropy.
This is where, of all of these panels, you all, we know and we promise, will walk away with new knowledge about how to incorporate charity into business and into your organizations.
The panel was moderated by Fox Business anchor Liz Claman, and panelists included Warby Parker co-founder David Gilboa, Artemis Strategies founder Hilde Keurig, Epic Foundation founder Alexandre Mars, and FlexJet chairman Ken Rickey. Mr. Rickey has been a serial entrepreneur in the aviation industry for over 20 years. He's the principal of Directional Aviation, which is home to some of the most successful private aviation companies in the world. One of the most exciting and innovative of these companies is FlexJet.
My name is Michael Silvestro. I'm the CEO of FlexJet. FlexJet is the most innovative private aviation company today in the world. We provide fractional ownership and leasing opportunities for customers, both high net worth individuals and corporations, and we serve their private travel needs.
I liken it to if people go on vacation in three ways, and they sometimes run a hotel room, sometimes they buy a timeshare, and sometimes they buy a vacation home, and FlexJet would be the timeshare of private aircraft.
FlexJet's status as a leader in their industry is no surprise once you take a closer look at the people who run it.
Ken and I have known each other for over 40 years, so we're childhood friends, and we actually were roommates in college at Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame. So my context with Ken, it spans decades, but on a day-to-day basis, I'd say that there are so many ways to describe working with Ken, but it's never a dull moment. It's always fun. It's always innovative. He is always challenging me, as well as the entire organization, to be better, to be the best that we can, but also not just in serving our customers, but to be compassionate on what we do and how we do it.
Now the owner of seven different aviation companies, Ken's interest in flying started with a spark from one of his father's passions.
I learned a love of travel from my father. I mean, I can remember having lawn chairs in our living room at home because my dad was saving money to, like, go to Nebraska. And the opportunity to be able to meld a love of traveling with a profession was clearly where my love of flying came from.
It was also Ken's father who first introduced him to the idea of philanthropy, but not in the way most people typically define the word.
It wasn't monetary philanthropy, it was personal philanthropy. Who needs help next door? Can I watch the kids while you're out, sir? So it was a personal philanthropy, not a financial. We even try to build it within our company, and we're not building philanthropy in terms of trying to make our employees give money. But we want them to come to work with us with a big heart.
This concept of personal philanthropy is one of Ken's core values, as he explained it to the audience at the 2018 Town & Country Philanthropy Summit.
Ken, give me your definition of philanthropy.
Well, I know philanthropy isn't something you do when you get older in life with more money. I think that, or when the company has a good quarter, I think philanthropy really, to me, is more of a culture. It's a culture of engaging people that have big hearts. And I also think that having that big heart or philanthropic culture is a leadership tool. I think I have seen a sea change in terms of the types of employees that work for us. 30 years ago, success was somehow defined by beating your competition, by, you know, making the most money, pleasing your shareholders. There's a different sea change coming now. In some ways, I want to take credit. I think our generation has done a good job at teaching people that there's more than money. And so we're bringing up a whole new generation of leaders who buy into that. Money will be the easiest thing to do if you have a workforce that's engaged with you, that is emboldened by your generosity. Think to manage people from the good side, not the bad side of their brain.
Ken is always available, really always available. And I mean, we employ over 1,000 people. And I would tell you, any one of those people could reach out to Ken in a heartfelt way, and he'd respond in a very personal way. And that generosity of spirit, I think, is something that is very, very unique.
Organizations that accumulate wealth, accumulate assets, accumulate income, I mean, accumulation for accumulation's sake is really an addiction. And I think that what you have to do with an organization today is so true. These people, employees are led by the mission of the organization. It can't be just 15% year over year growth. And so, like, for instance, we tell our managers three things. Number one, it's births, deaths, and disasters. And so you can be a good manager in an organization if you pay attention to those three things and the people around you. And when you cultivate that kind of a culture, then what happens is somebody's next door neighbor is in Puerto Rico and they can't get dialysis. And then that percolates up through the organization. And so we don't necessarily strike out as a mission to give away a free plane with everyone we sell. But we do. but I'm envious of the margins. But what we do is try to permeate the idea of making everybody engaged when it affects them.
Well, I think what you explained and what you explained with your employees is that you implant that once they're part of the experience. I mean, they still want the lime green Lambo, I think, but they also look at that as a gift as well, that experience.
The idea of personal philanthropy doesn't just apply to Ken's business leadership style. He and his wife Pamela have taught this mentality to their three children from a young age through a family organization they formed and appropriately named the Ricky Family Foundation.
The Family Foundation began, at the point in time when we were trying to coalesce our children in terms of teaching them about giving. And the foundation seemed like the vehicle at the time. It's evolved, certainly, but we started very early with foundation meetings. Even my youngest son, who was probably at the time he first attended his first foundation meeting, was 4 years old. And they have to come to the foundation meetings with some ideas as to what causes they would see.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Ricky, and I'm Ken Ricky's daughter. Philanthropy has always played a very important role in our family. I would say my first memories of discussing philanthropy would be sitting around the dining room table when we first started the discussions of our family foundation. Each year, my dad would ask that my brothers and my mom and I do some research about different kinds of charities and organizations that we're interested in. And then we would sit as a group together and discuss and kind of talk through why they're important to us and how we as a family could make a big impact.
And making a big impact they are. Prompted by one of the Family Foundation meetings, Elizabeth discovered an organization called the Able Flight Program, which she now works with closely to help organize fundraisers and events.
The Able Flight Program, in a short description, would be a program that helps people with disabilities learn to fly. However, there's much more that goes into that. The Able Flight Program gives people who have had immense physical and emotional struggles the opportunity to challenge themselves with the enjoyment of learning to fly an aircraft. It's really just a great opportunity for people who felt like that's something they could never attain to be able to solo and receive their pilot's license and also prepare them for a future career in aviation.
Ken's youngest son, Austin, has also found a passion for philanthropy through a very personal cause. At an early age, Austin was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, a genetic disease that affects the lungs and other organs.
He would be starving, and he would try to eat, and then he would scarf down food, and then he would throw up right away. And for a long time, they thought he had a blockage in his stomach. It took about a year to figure out what it was.
Remarkably, Austin, who is now 16 years old, is living a healthy and happy life, due in large part to the amazing work the CF Foundation has done in treating the disease. When Austin was just 12 years old, he gave a speech at a CF Foundation dinner that brought the house down.
Then he explained that I was supposed to say something about cystic fibrosis that would make you proud of supporting this event, and I want to give more money. And I said, okay.
The most important thing about his speech was not the applause, but that they raised twice the amount that they'd ever raised at one of those events before, and I think it's his speech.
Besides entrepreneurship and philanthropy, one of Ken's deepest passions is the University of Notre Dame.
Notre Dame is such a unique place. I think that there are lots of places where you can learn academic things. What I learned about Notre Dame was, most importantly, is I learned about compassion. And I learned about what's important in the world, what's important to do. And I was very close to Father Theodore Hesburgh, who was there for 35 years. He used to say that to have a successful life, you need to only do three things. You need to be true to your God, you need to be as good as your parents, and you need to champion the cause of underdogs. And I think this is what Notre Dame does very well. I think that they are driven as a university that thinks in terms of how are we always reaching out to underdogs? What causes are we champion today? And I don't know if you ever watch a Notre Dame football game, but if you right after halftime, they'll always say, what are you fighting for? And that is not marketing. That is not marketing. That is the true spirit and character of that university.
And now, the Band of the Fighting Irish plays the Harold Arlen song made famous by Judy Garland in the movie The Wizard of Oz. It was played at the wedding of Ken and Pamela Rickey. Here is Over the Rainbow.
My father graduated from the University of Notre Dame, and the Irish have always played a very important role in our family. One of my most favorite recent memories, my parents gave a lovely gift to Notre Dame to support the recreational fields, and we were on campus as a family together in the band hall, which has also been important to our family for many years. And the band walked in from the back of the room and started to play the fight song. My parents' favorite song, which is Over the Rainbow, and a few songs from my grandma and grandpa's favorite list. And we all stood up and turned around, and it was so unbelievably moving and thoughtful that the band would come in to thank us for the gift that we had given them and to be able to make just joy and excitement, and it just filled the room.
My name is Greg Dugard. I serve the University of Notre Dame as the Associate Vice President for University Relations. First time I met Ken, the first time I met Ken would have been at a development-sponsored event with the Notre Dame Marching Band. And as most times when Ken is near or participating in an event that has the band present, he lights up. He was a former trumpet player for the university, and that's the first time that I met Ken. How would I describe Ken? That's a great question. He is in many ways he's one of the most dynamic people that I know. He is an outstanding leader. He's someone that is passionate about his business. He's passionate about his faith. He's passionate about his family and where it has probably impacted me the most. He's passionate about the university.
The latest way Ken has impacted the university is in the form of a monumental unrestricted gift. In October of 2017, the Rickey family donated $100 million to Notre Dame via a uniquely structured model Ken refers to as a philanthropic succession partnership. The structure not only provides a generous gift to the university, it also acts as a vehicle for Ken and Pam to transfer their wealth to their children without forcing them into running a family business.
Ken just gave $100 million to University of Notre Dame. Sorry for all of you fans who are, the rivals of Notre Dame, but talk about that.
Go Irish. I think we were trying to do three things. Number one is that we wanted to be thoughtful about succession, wealth succession. To us, that meant making sure that our heirs had enough money to do something, but not enough money to do nothing.
That's a Buffett quote. That's a Warren Buffett quote.
Well, brilliant. I'm glad he got it from me. the second thing we wanted to accomplish is I've seen so much discord around wealth transfer. And it comes because different people have different stakes in the businesses. Employees have a stake in the business. Other shareholders have a stake. And then your heirs have a stake in those businesses. And some love them, and some don't. And we've always wanted our children to do something that they're passionate about and be compassionate about how we do that, how they do it. But we never wanted to force them into something they didn't want to do. And I've seen a lot of families that get broken up by how wealth transfers. And so we wanted to make sure that it was done in a very fair manner and with what I would say would be an indisputable, reputable third party. And so sometimes that usually ends up in most worlds as a trustee. But the problem with trustees became for us is that goes into effect long after we're gone, and then you have no control over what that trustee's mission is and what they want to do. So let's pick a mission that we're thoughtful about. Let's partner with them. So in essence, what happens with the universities, they step into the role as a trustee. They're an arbiter of the seven different companies today, and they provide a process by which any other trustee would have them liquidated. And I think that's the big thing. We wanted to force them into liquidation, and we wanted to give the opportunity for our children to own them if they wanted to, but they had to participate in a fair transaction. And Notre Dame took on a fiduciary risk to provide the role of that
okay,
trustee.
Okay, let me ask, because this was recently in the papers, where an incredibly generous man, Stephen Schwartzman, we know him, of course, he's a big New Yorker, was rejected in his pursuit to put his name on something at his elementary school, and he was giving a big gift, and you know, that gets a little touchy, slapping your name on something. A lot of people want that. Do you? Is the Ricky name going to be somewhere on a building in at Notre Dame?
I think that's the other thing that as you enter into this realm a little bit, what you find is that there is this whole kind of aggrandizing of philanthropy. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that many organizations get tied to whatever that gift is, and they might not need a new science building. And so we decided to find the organization that we trusted and to give it without restriction.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Without having any names
without
tied to it or anything like that. But thank you. I don't know what the education will be 50 years from now. I mean, right now, education is struggling with how do we not make education only for the rich? And when you go to these fine universities, that's where it's headed. And so we didn't want to restrict how that money goes out, because maybe they want to deploy it in a different manner, no matter we don't even foresee today.
Yeah.
So we're very encouraging of not having restricted gifts, because you either love the organization. If you love them, let them do what they do.
If someone comes and talks to you about a potential nine-figure commitment, and you can't help but be shocked. On the other hand, it's not that surprising, because it's Ken. He's just an outside-of-the-box thinker, an incredibly innovative guy, and one who deeply cares about the university and, I think, the well-being of his family. You know, this just made sense to him. So shocked was my initial, and then thought, well, this is Ken.
The idea was to somehow replace a trustee with someone you trust. And in this case, we knew, because of our love for Notre Dame, because of our, being in simpatico with the vision that they had there, we felt that was an organization we could trust to carry on our vision into the future. They're acting in the place of a trustee. I think they're unique to it. I'm not saying that every organization in the world could take on this kind of partnership, because you'd want to have in that organization someone that was stable, that you knew would be around for many, many years to come, that was true to their mission, so that you wouldn't see their mission change over time. But when you find an organization like that, to me, it's a much, much better solution and has much more optionality than the traditional methods we've seen of passing generational wealth, which are some trusts, some control, things like that. And then I think to further embolden what we think the university did, we wanted to make it unrestricted. Because I know what the needs are today at Notre Dame, but I don't know what they're going to be in 50 years or 60 years, nor do I even know what society's needs will be. I know that Notre Dame will be at the forefront of thinking about what goodness has to come to society, and I know they'll take a leadership role in that, and I didn't want to constrain their ability to use our generosity anyway, but to focus on what they think needs to happen.
$100 million is unheard of to be unrestricted. Absolutely amazing. And it just shows the trust that Ken has in this institution and the belief that he has in the mission of this place that's pretty remarkable.
While the gift from the Ricky family will clearly benefit the university, Ken hopes it will help accomplish a few other things as well.
Number one was, entrepreneurs that I know are always looking for entrepreneurial ways to do things. And I found the traditional way that we transfer wealth today is not very entrepreneurial. In fact, if anything, I would say it kind of goes down a very, very traditional path. Some of it, though, springs from the standpoint that, you know, you heard it here first, but sometimes people that are entrepreneurial want to be in control. And so they tend to design formats where they control from the grave. And so I think, number one, we wanted to make a statement about the fact that this was an entrepreneurial structure. By understanding the structure, you're going to, by default, start to rule less from the grave. You're going to sacrifice some control. But I think sometimes that may be the best form of giving. So I think the model is to show them an entrepreneurial alternative to wealth transfer. And then the second one was to see if we could get it as close to being selfless. In other words, we're not going to name the building. We're not going to control from the grave. We're going to make the gift unrestricted. So I think we wanted to educate people about some of the novelty of the idea and that our financial advisors helped us with. But we also wanted to say something that's important in giving, which is there's a selfless part of giving that we think makes it better. My strongest memory of Notre Dame is that when my father passed away, Notre Dame sent a trumpeter to his graveside to play the alma mater. And it was very touching, and still to this day, whenever I'm at Notre Dame and I hear that alma mater, it has a very, very special place in your heart. And you have to ask, what institution does this? What institution thinks about it? And this was 25 years ago, so this was long before Notre Dame ever saw me as a donor or a contributor to that university. It was just the heart of that institution.
There is a line that closes our alma mater that is, love thee, Notre Dame. And when I think of Ken, I think that he embodies that in an incredible way, both visibly, vocally, and the way he lives his life.
From the first plane that the Wright brothers built to today's Gulfstream G650s, the aviation industry has come a long way. And in that same way, philanthropy has continued to evolve. The philanthropic succession partnership model that the Ricci family unveiled to the world is an upgrade from older models. It's a new and improved way of giving that minimizes family conflict and maximizes the potential of the gift. So what's next for Flexjet?
Just recently, we've embarked over the last several years on our Red Label program, which is focused on several kind of components, the most important which is a dedicated crew for specific aircraft. But our vision is really to evolve into bigger airplanes, as well as to launch into Europe. So for us, the world is getting smaller in terms of where we plan to do business and to take care of people.
And what are some of the ways Flexjet plans to continue its philanthropic efforts as a company?
We really try to be sensitive to particularly areas that are hit by our natural disasters and where we can provide lift airplanes to be able to supply supplies and or transport people of, you know, in terms of the medical field or even aid workers. I think that's where we can really contribute in a big way.
I can give you a list of meritorious acts that we do at Flexjet, but I don't think that's what I want you to take away. I want you to take away that we want our people to lead with a big heart. In other words, if we're not good to the people that work for us, I don't think they care how much relief money we send to Haiti, right? If we're not there when they had unexpected cancers, when our medical plan didn't cover them, we have to step up and cover them. When they get 90 days off with pay and they need that extra week, we have to step in and do that. We don't have a rule book that we have to abide by. That's the philanthropy that we live. Then the other stuff is easy, because then they bring to you all the causes. Like, we had a pilot whose next door neighbor had family in Puerto Rico and they couldn't get dialysis. And so he knew that he was in an organization where he could reach out to Mike Silvestro, our CEO, and he could ask Michael, is there any way we could get a plane to get this child out of there and get him to a hospital where he can get dialysis? But if Michael, if our company doesn't set the idea that we have internal philanthropy, that we have a big heart, he would be, in many companies, you'd be too emboldened if you even asked the question. So I think the most important thing we do about philanthropy is we create an environment that lets you ask.
And what's on the horizon for the Ricci Family Foundation?
You heard it here first. More money for Notre Dame. Only if they have a winning football team. I think every year we spend time with the foundation, with our family, thinking about the direction. And what I'm looking forward to is watching our children start to take control of the direction it goes into. I think that's the cusp. I think we as parents have laid a great groundwork for them, and I'm looking forward to seeing the transfer of goodness to them.
Flexjet has been a leader in the fractional jet ownership industry for more than 20 years and recently began offering Red Label by Flexjet, which features the youngest fleet in the industry, flight crews dedicated to a single aircraft, and the LXI cabin collection of interiors. Impeccable style, unmatched service. You won't just be flown, you'll be moved. For more information, call 800-FLEXJET or visit flexjet.com. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of TNC Talks. Please rate and review us on the Apple Podcasts app, and we'll see you for the next episode of TNC Talks.